fighting a fly, all of singing, so I really hope I brought it up here with me so the fight can continue. It's good to see everyone here tonight, and we welcome those joining us on Facebook. We're gonna pick up in Hebrews chapter 4. I think that's where we're at. Hebrews, of course, is a book that is full of warnings. Hebrews is a very sobering book, and it's warning us, of course, to be careful, because really people of every generation have been tempted and to some extent have fallen away from God. And so Hebrews chapter 4, and remember, Hebrews chapter 3, he's going to continue doing so. He's kind of preaching using Psalm 95 as his outline. He's kind of expounding upon Psalm 95 here in Hebrews. And so he says here in verse 1 of chapter 4, "Therefore, while the promise of entering his rest still stands..." And again, Psalms 95, like we talked about the last time I was up here on a Sunday night, it's dealing with that wilderness generation that Moses led out of Egyptian slavery, and of course into the wilderness, and for 40 years they were there. And then eventually, under Joshua's leadership, they were able to go into the promised land. And then much later, David is warning the people of his generation not to be like the wilderness generation and fall away from God. And so the Hebrew writer, or right here, is picking up on that theme, and he is saying the promise of entering God's rest still stands. "Let us fear lest any of you should seem to have failed to reach it. For good news came to us just as to them, but the message they heard did not benefit them, because they were not united by faith with those who listened." And so just because you receive good news, that doesn't mean that you get to necessarily inherit the promises. You have to listen. You have to have faith. You have to have patience. You have to trust in the Lord. And that wilderness generation, they did not do that. And so again, David's warning the people of his generation, if you want to enter that rest of God, then you have to listen to God. You cannot let your heart be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. And verse 3 says, "For we who have believed enter that rest. As he has said," again here he's quoting Psalm 95, "As I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest, although his works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he has somewhere spoken of the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again, this passage, he said, they shall not enter my rest." So the Sabbath day, that was when the Jewish people remembered that every 7 days, that was a reflection on the fact that when God had finished his work, that he rested on that seventh day. But that wasn't the only rest. There was a rest that was coming at the end of time. That there was a rest that all of God's people would be able to enter into. That the wilderness generation, that they didn't enter into that rest. And even the generation of David, there was still a rest available to them if they would listen, if they would obey. And the Hebrew writer says that rest is still available. And we can still enter that rest if we believe and we don't end up like the wilderness generation. He says in verse 6, "Since therefore it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly received the good news fail to enter because of disobedience, again he appoints a certain day, today." And again, he's quoting Psalm 95, saying through David so long afterward, in the words already quoted, "Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts." And he says this hundreds of years after Moses and Joshua. David here is still encouraging God's people to enter that rest of God, that they had not entered into that rest yet. In some ways, they really hadn't even entered the promised land yet. And the people of the Hebrew writer's generation, the first century church, if they weren't willing to listen to Jesus, then they wouldn't enter that rest. And the message, of course, is still relevant to us today. If you don't harden your hearts, if you believe, if you fix your eyes on Jesus, you can enter the rest of God. Verse 8 says, "For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on," David's generation. "So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God." And that's a great phrase. Jesus is that Sabbath rest. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. If you put your faith in Jesus, that there is a sense in which you have already entered into God's rest. For whoever has entered into God's rest has also rested from his works. So there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. If you fix your eyes on Jesus, if you believe, if you guard against this hardening of your hearts from sin, if you guard against disobedience, you too can enter the Sabbath rest that God has prepared for his people. Verse 11 says, "Let us therefore strive to enter that rest, so that no one may fall from the same sort of disobedience. For the word of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing to the division of soul and of spirit, of joints and of marrow, of discerning the thought and the intentions of the heart. And no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must give account." And that's what Judgment Day is all about, right? Judgment Day is all about revealing the things that are hidden. God's word pierces right through. It lays us bare. It exposes everything. And we have to stand before God fully exposed. But if we trust him and we believe in him and we obey him and are faithful to him, then we have absolutely nothing to fear on that day. The only one who has something to fear is the one who is hiding the truth. It is the one who's pretending to be something that they are not. Everything will be discerned. And you can enter God's rest if you believe. And so the Hebrew writer encourages them to strive to enter that rest. And so the writer keeps encouraging the readers to keep their eyes on Jesus and keep listening to Jesus and his message and his people, because there were already Christians here at the writing of the Hebrews letter who were beginning to forsake Jesus and his message and his people. And that message, I think, continues to be relevant to us today. There are so many messages out there that are trying to draw our attention away from Jesus in so many ways. And so we need constant reminders to encourage each other a lot, to admonish one another, to exhort one another to fix our eyes on Jesus. Verse 14 says, "Since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to our confession." Again, there are so many things that play on what has already been said, but I want to spend just a few moments this evening thinking about having a high priest, having someone who mediates between God and mankind. The idea of mediation isn't one that's really of super importance in our culture, but in biblical culture, it was incredibly important. If there was someone who was of a different class or status, somebody who was richer, more important, maybe a king or nobility of sorts, somebody who was higher up on the social ladder than you, you would probably want to find someone who could mediate between the two of you, who was sort of in between your two classes, that could approach the nobility where you're just a lowly serf of sorts. If you needed help or support, you wouldn't just go up to him and say, "Hey, king, I need your help with this." You would have to find someone to be a mediator for you. Again, someone who knew you and someone who knew the noble person. And that idea of mediation, what was also important to religion, the idea of having a priest. There was something that was part of the Levitical system, the Mosaic law, the system through which the Jewish people interacted with God. They had a priesthood. And at the head of that priesthood was the high priest who would assist them in mediating with God. He would go into the Holy of Holies once a year, and there he would offer gifts on behalf of the people, and then come out and he would minister to the people on behalf of God. He would mediate between God and Israel, and so he was a go-between of sorts. And that's the idea. To us, it sort of sounds kind of negative. We often talk about cutting out the middleman. But in that culture, it was extremely important to have a middleman. I like to think of it as a needle and a thread. And how a needle with a thread, you can sew together two pieces of cloth. And that needle and thread, they go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And they weave the two together. That's what a mediator does. That's what a priest does. A priest mediates between the people and God and brings the two together. Of course, now we live with Jesus as our high priest, and we are the priesthood of believers. And he has mediated, he has brought us together with the Father. And the Hebrew writer is saying that Jesus' priesthood is so much better and so much higher than the priesthood from the descendants of Aaron, because Jesus is the very Son of God. And Jesus has entered into the holy place that is through the heavens. And the way the Jewish people, the way they thought of the heavens or the sky was a veil that separated people from God. And again, that's what a mediator does. He goes from the place where the people are to behind the curtain, to the place of God, and he brings the two together. And that's what the priesthood had symbolically done. They had gone past the curtain into the holy place once a year. But our high priest, Jesus, is so much better, because he passed not through the veil of the temple, but through the very heavens themselves. The actual veil, the actual holy place, the actual inner sanctuary, the actual place where God dwells, and he is there, and having offered one sacrifice for all time and ministering on our behalf in the presence of God. And so he is there continually mediating for us to bring us and to reconcile us to God. And so he says in verse 15, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet is without sin." That's one of the most important parts of a priest, is that they have to be a human being, right? That they have to have been able to experience what we have experienced, gone through what we have gone through, share in our weaknesses. Jesus could not mediate between us and the Father if he was only God, because Jesus, though, is both man and God, and he can perfectly mediate between men and God, because he himself is both man and God, and he has gone through everything that we have gone through. He knows what it is to suffer. He knows what it is to be tempted. He knows what it is to want to give in and yet was without sin. Jesus didn't give in. He didn't stop going. He went the distance. He continued to press on and to be faithful to his Father. So he's the perfect high priest who shares in our weaknesses, but is without sin. Verse 16 says, "Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." We don't go to the Father without Jesus. We go to the Father through Jesus. And it's because of his mediation, it's because of his priesthood, it's because of what he's done to mediate between us and the Father that we can now approach the throne of grace and find help in the time of need. And again, as I said before, if you were a first century peasant, you wouldn't just go up to the king and say, "Hey, king, give me some help with this." You wouldn't just approach a king without a mediator, someone who knows and has a relationship with both you and the king and can bring the two of you together. That's what Jesus has done for us. He's reconciled us with the Father. He has mediated between us and the Father. He's offered his own blood to bring us into the Father's throne room, so that we can have confidence when we draw near to the throne of grace, so that we can receive mercy and find grace in for help in a time of need. The Hebrew writer is empathizing with everything his audience is going through. He's saying, I know you're tempted to give up, but don't abandon the only one who can mediate between you and the Father. If you need help and you need grace and you need support, then keep your eyes on Jesus. Fix your eyes on Jesus, because that's the only place you'll be able to find mediation, that you'll be able to go before the throne of grace so that you can find help in your time of need. I think that's incredibly important for us today, that if we need help and support, and we do, because we are often weak and we are often tempted, then we can only find that through Jesus. And again, he is that perfect mediator to bring us to the Father so that we can have help in our time of need. Tonight, if you need the prayers of the congregation, this would be an opportune time. If there's anyone here tonight that hasn't put Christ on in baptism, now would be an opportune time. I don't know that I see anyone, but any time is an opportune time. If anyone on Facebook is ready to put Christ on in baptism, contact one of us. We are welcoming and want to do that for you. Please come as together we stand and we sing.